Blog Talk Radio.
Of Delicious Talk, the host. That's Marvin Gaye, Sexual Healing. How's everybody this Friday? Nice, cool, brisk day today. Wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold. It was just right. Okay, I have a very, very good show this evening. Young man's first novel, The Ugly Side of Sex by D.K. Walker. He'll be here shortly. In the meantime, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Rhea. Hello, Rhea.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fantastic. And yourself?
I'm simply wonderful.
Good. How's your vacation going?
It's going fabulous. Let me tell you why I started laughing. I looked at your advertisement, and you said we were going to give our reviews. That was a lofty ideal of me thinking I was going to get some reading done.
Oh, so you didn't?
I didn't pick it up. I just showed people it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I didn't get it read, but I'm still ready.
Oh, okay. Because I finished it today, you know, because, you know, having little interruptions here and interruptions there would have been finished, because this book definitely held my attention from the very first page until the ending. And it's a lot of things in this book that, you know, made my perspective of a sex addict change, because it's back how it was.
Now you see what I mean when I said that to you. Because in those two interviews I heard of me, and I'm sitting back there, and I'm like, okay. And I'm seeing and feeling myself kind of struggling with my own self. And then I had to open up my mind a little bit, because I don't understand that avenue, and I believe I was somewhat closed off. Because I
right.
mean, yeah.
But if you had read the book, this is what I'm saying. This is why my perspective of it changed. Because remember how we spoke of the fact that if a person is addicted, they would, you know, basically be addicted to that one person and wanting to have sex with that one person.
Mm-hmm.
But from reading this book, it really made me realize that it's more than just being with that one person, because, you know, the character in this book is actually, and I'm just seeing this, you know, like really seeing all these things that he's doing and, you know, almost feeling it and the smells and this and that. All
oh,
this
wow.
stuff is very visual to me. So this is why I'm saying my perspective of it changed. And I truly believe that, you know, how he describes the different incidents and the things he did with these women and the different types of women he was with, it made no difference to him. So I'm really feeling more that the, you know, the addiction goes beyond just being with one person, even though you can be addicted to a person. But, you know, being a sex addict is really, this is, you know, it just seems like this is really, you know, the real deal here, because this book was raw. It was, you learned a lot from reading it, which I did. And, you know, you take something away when you read this book, because it's like the character, his name is Nicholas. I mean, yeah, Nicholas, but he's going by Nicky in the book. And
mm-hmm.
he just, oh, my God, he was molested by his two female cousins when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
They used to make him suck their breath, you know, when he would go and spend the weekends or whatever with them. So that's molestation. And then he had his, when he first realized that he was, had those sexual thoughts, was, I think he was maybe about 3, 4, he was very, very young. And
oh, wow.
his mom was taking him across town to see his aunt or to visit someone. And he got on the bus, and he said the bus driver was the most beautiful lady he had ever seen in his life. And he could not get her out of his mind. And when he got off the bus, you know how they say, oh, he's so cute, you know, they'd be in his face. He said he kissed her on his on her lips. And, you know, that caused him to be aroused. Or, you know, he just couldn't get that incident
mm-hmm.
off his mind. And then how he just ventured out and was with different all types of women. And, you know, the only thing that he did not do with his addiction was he did not engage in any homosexual activities, you know, where I'm sure that, you know, some people with that addiction will engage in activities, you know, homosexual or even with animals. But his was basically with women. And like I said, the different, the different women, all types of women, from prostitutes to whores to crackheads, and I mean just the whole gamut. You know, so like I said, it had changed my perspective as far as a person with an addiction. Now, as far as, you know, like when they say, because, you know, they used to refer to females when they had that sexual addiction, they referred to them as nymphomaniacs.
Correct.
And I have a little bit that I, you know, did a little research on that, and it said nymphomaniac is a female whose sex drive is obsessively high, considered a mental illness, because the word maniac does mean mental illness, and nympho means many or something like that. And then it says nymph, someone normally, a woman, addicted to sex, requiring it at every possible opportunity, and is a woman or a girl who is very much interested in sex. She tries one man after another and is never satisfied. But in this book, Nicholas, that's what he wanted to be. He wanted that satisfaction, and he, you know, he definitely got that satisfaction, you know, by any means necessary. And, you know, doing all types of sex acts, you know, and, oh, my God, and, you know, bringing up the, when it came to the internet, you know, how his addiction had went from, because he had gotten bored and tired of, you know, just doing the same thing over and over, so it went to an addiction with the porn on the internet and him masturbating.
So it did venture out other than physical.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, I think that someone who's constantly, then it got to a point where he wasn't even taking care of himself. All he was just thinking about was, you know, getting, having sex and, you know, being satisfied. But, you know, it's this book is really something, you know, and anybody who has a sex addiction or knows someone with a sex addiction, you know, maybe they should pick this book up. You know, I don't want to really give away too much, you know, in the book, because he is going to, you know, read an excerpt from the book and, you know, answer any questions that we may have for him. So I'm going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. I want you more and more. Be sure, Tender Love, I'm sorry. I love that song. So, Rhea, while we're waiting for DK to call in, did you have any, because remember we had talked about it before. So what do you think now that I mentioned what I had just mentioned as far as like how this story is going? Rhea, she must have me on mute. Okay, I'm going to bring
sorry,
in.
I'm sorry. I'm just talking. I put it on mute because I was singing, and I remember what I played. And I'm just talking, and then I'm fumbling with the phone to get it off of mute. Okay, now, to answer your question, I got an extremely good sense of that. In the two interviews that I've heard of me and already.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the questions became so intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic was something that, to be totally honest, until I arrived here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, I couldn't get it off of my mind. It was just something that I kept thinking about because I'm a pretty open-minded person. And
right.
Even though I may not agree, understand, or whatever the parameters are, what somebody is going through or a particular thing, I am at least open-minded to conceive it. This was something that I was not open-minded on at all. And it raised so many questions that it's like, okay. And then I started just, especially after the second interview, I started kind of thinking, well, maybe I need to revisit this. And I knew I had questions, but I didn't know what those questions were yet. And I really wish I could have gotten into the book, but I couldn't. Girl, please. I did
right.
Everything but read.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you read this book, I'm quite sure, you know, like I said, it had changed my perspective as far as a person with this sex addiction. Now, I don't know whether, you know, Tiger Woods and all them were, you know, it's what they were doing was justified as being a sex addiction, because by the women that he was with, you know, and it really wasn't that many as opposed to the women that Nicholas was with and the things that they did. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in D.K. Walker so we can get him to answer the questions that are burning in our minds. Hello?
Hello.
202. Hi, this is D.K.
Yes, it is. I am so sorry that I am late. Please forgive me. This is so not like me, but thank you for having me nonetheless.
Right. Well, I had already, you know, explained to our listeners, you know, what the book was about and a little bit, you know, briefing them on the character Nicholas and, you know, from what my perspective of reading the book, how I came to the conclusion that this was considered a sex addiction because of the simple fact Nicholas was with all kind of women and he basically was out there trying to be with these women solely for the satisfaction of his sexual appetite.
This is true. The book gives you firsthand look inside of a sex addict's life. It pulls no punches. It's graphic. It's humorous. It's a multitude of things. But if it's nothing else, it's true to life, true to form. And the reason that I can tell you that it gives you a firsthand look is because it's looking at, you know, my life. It's based, at least I want to say, 85% of you know, my life has been putting it into these pages.
So let's go to the beginning of the book where Nicholas is speaking to Bones, and I'm not going to give away who Bones is because I didn't know myself until the ending of the book, and I really thought that was a really neat way how you started that, you know, and then how it ended, because I was wondering, who is this Bones? Who is this Bones? But, you know, in the end I found out. So how did you come up with the concept of this book?
Thank you for asking that question. The concept came about, I needed to tell a story that's been, you know, I won't say has been told before, but I needed to tell a story that, you know, would hold the reader's attention. You know, I wanted to paint a story like, you know, you're watching a movie. You know, I wanted to hold your attention and take you on, you know, the highs and lows of the character's life. The interaction between Nicholas, which is the main character, and Bones had to be in a way to make the readers want to constantly wonder, like, you know, what are the dynamics? And I'm giving you clues to who Bones is actually throughout the whole book. You know, I'm not going to get into detail what those clues are, but as you read and find out who Bones is to Nicholas and whatnot, the first thing you say is, oh, and then you start seeing things in the book. You'd be like, oh, I should have seen that coming because of the clues that was given. You know, the concept, you know, actually was based, and this is crazy because, you know, I'm 41, and I have been an avid reader my whole life. And I used to read comic books, like, you know, when I was a kid. Believe it or not, I still do. But long story short, there was this one comic book, and the way it was set up, it just really sat with me. And it set me to the fact, I'm like, I've ever gotten, you know, a chance to actually write, that I was going to put that to use and bring the characters that I read, you know, many years ago, you know, to life, you know, I guess in my writing style. And that's how I came up with the concept of my book and its characters.
Okay. So when you, how long did it take you actually to write the book?
It should have took less time than it did. It took me about a year, but it actually should have took me less than that because I had took maybe 3 to 4 months off, and I had stopped in fear of, you know, did I want to actually put this much out about myself.
So what exactly causes a person to become addicted to
to sex? For me, and I'm speaking, you know, for me it's just like I found something at a very young age that I liked. And, you know, since I liked it, I got exposed to sex at a very young age. And through that exposure and whatnot, I've always treated sex like, you know, I have to have it now, satisfy me now type attitude. Once that had occurred to me and that very young age and whatnot, you know, the older I got, I still had that childlike mentality towards sex. I didn't necessarily think about the consequences of, like, you know, treating sex like, you know, with respect and responsibilities. You know, as you grow up, you don't look at it like, you know, this could happen. You know, I still treated sex as like, you know, a kid getting his first taste of candy, you know, get that sugar rush, and that's a wrap, a kid bounces off the walls. So, you know, because of my exposure to sex at such a young age and whatnot, I think that, you know, that helped, you know, begin the process of that addiction.
Okay. Now, in the book, Nicholas was also spending time with his cousins. Would you say that that would push it on that much more? You know, because you know what his cousins was doing to him. That was basically they were molesting him.
Right. Sexual abuse can lead to various forms of sexual addiction. It's not, you know, it hasn't been, you know, a direct correlation between the two, per se. But, you know, sexual abuse at a very young age in kids can lead to, you know, sexual addiction or some form of acting out sexually. So mm-hmm. by Nicholas being, you know, sexually abused by his two female cousins, you know, at a very young age, like I said earlier, piqued his interest, you know, much earlier than life, than, like, you know, at this point in time, he should have been playing with, like, Tonka Tuck toys, you know, G.I. Joe, things of this nature. But, you know, he's actually, you know, enamored, you know, with females. And I'm not talking about females at his age. I'm talking about females that's much older, and he's still just a child. And so to
right.
be building that role at an early time, it's just like, you know, that dynamic in him was set there, and it was pretty much no stopping. You know, it's just like he got turned on to something, whatnot, and turned on and turned out. And he's been turned out his whole life.
Hmm. Okay, let's go.
That's
Pardon?
Similar. That's similar. Hi, DK, this is Rhea. That's similar to a child that was molested. That
mm-hmm.
Is then being, quote unquote, promiscuous. You know, that falls along those same prospects, in a way. So I can,
right.
I mean, that's pretty clear to me. Because it happens,
yeah.
Well, I know it happens in females.
Yeah,
but I don't think that they become addicted to the sex when they, because being promiscuous is, more or less on a different level of being addicted to it. I think it's basically they act it out because they think that this is the way that you deal with it. You know, being raped and you feel worthless, you know, like, you know, why shouldn't I do it, you know, because...
if I can interject, I think both of y'all may be right, and I'm speaking from personal experience, because it's just like it gets to the point, you know, after these things have happened to you, you know, because I was, you know, that character in the book at that point in time, that was me. So that has happened to me. And, you know, I treat sex as, like, the get-off, you know, as, you know, forget the consequences of my actions. It's just that, you know, my actions, you know, had to become more, I hate to use the word deviant, but I'm going to use the word deviant, you know, progressive over time, to the fact that, you know, it's like any other addiction. Like if you have a drug addiction and the things that a drug addict would do for drugs, a person that eats too much, the things they would do for food, a person that may smoke, a person that may drink, you know, all these, you know, people have things in common where you know, they have tunnel vision, and that's, you know, a true sex addict has tunnel vision, whereas the only thing he knows is to feed the beast of lust.
Mm-hmm.
And women, yep. You know, that get, you know, sexually abused at a young age, and, you know, they become promiscuous and whatnot. They won't necessarily become addicts, but they're lashing out, you know, because sex would introduce them at such a young age. So that's their way of lashing out. And same thing with, you know, young boys that get, you know, sexually abused at a young age. They lash out. They, you know, sad to say they reenact. Not the actual mm-hmm. abuse from somebody else, but they reenact, you know what I'm saying, feeling worthless. So every sex act becomes more and more and more until they want demeaning sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vicious cycle, to say the least.
Okay, now, would you say that prostitutes are addicted to sex, or is it that they're addicted to the money that they get for having sex?
That's a good question. I'm not inclined to say whether prostitutes are addicted to sex or the money. Most prostitutes are, of course, you know, they come from broken homes. They've been victims of sexual abuse. And I think that it becomes a lifestyle. I think they can actually, if they could, they would walk away from that lifestyle, you know. If there was addiction within them, it could be the pull of money. But I think, you know, and I have to say I'm not clinically inclined to make this, you know, to make this assumption from a doctor's point of view. But, you know, personally speaking, I think a prostitute is more so addicted to the lifestyle and money, and the sex is just a vehicle to get, you know, that money and live that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Because being addicted, you're basically looking for that satisfaction that goes along with you having sex. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, sure. You're definitely right. You're looking for that satisfaction, and once you reach that satisfaction and achieve that satisfaction, you know, you want to top it. It's like a person that does crack. You can never get high as you can from the first time you've had your first hit of crack. So what you do, you're
right.
Constantly looking. You know, you're constantly looking. You always want to out-top that last high. But it's psychological. You know, same thing, you know, with being a sex addict and whatnot. You do this crazy stuff that you a normal person wouldn't do. And so what's crazy to others is normal to you. You know, whether it be, you know, sleeping around, having unprotected sex, being in threesomes and things of this nature. I mean, you're always looking to do something more and more demeaning to yourself. It's just like it becomes a really perverted way of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And you do these things and whatnot because you believe that your self-worth is, you know, is at an all-time low. So it takes something, you know, monumental to like, you know, make you realize that something's wrong with me. But until you have that realization, you know, it becomes normal. And other people that may be privy to your life, they're looking like, you know, there's something not right. But you look like there's not a problem. Or you make love what you become. It becomes a way of life that you really enjoy. And you're not looking for help, especially if you start to like it. And because sex is so enjoyable, you don't want to stop. Even when you see things may not be quite right, because sex is so enjoyable.
Right. Well, is there a treatment and a cure for a person addicted to sex?
Well, of course, with any addiction, it's always, you know, you have to admit that you have a problem. They do have various 12-step programs out, you know, for sexual anonymous, pardon me, to help you get help, but nothing works, no matter what addiction you may have. Nothing works unless you want it to work.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want it to work, it's just like you're just spinning your wheels. You got to really want it to work. But they do have groups out here, you know, to help you defeat it. A lot of people like to think that this disease is just something made up to help people that's promiscuous, you know, that has, you know, a multitude of sex partners and whatnot. But speaking from experience, it's a true disease. You know, it tears down homes. You know, I'm heard y'all talking about Tiger Woods earlier, and once again, I do apologize for calling in late. I got caught up in, but I was definitely rushing home, you know, to get to the phone and get comfortable and, you know, be on your great show. When you talk about Tiger Woods, and, you know, I don't know if he had a true addiction. I really don't know.
Right,
you know, superstars that got caught, you know, but, you know, since that convenient excuse is out there of being a sex addict, that's the first thing that you hear. You know, but I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, how can that be? And speak from experience, I'm looking at my life, and then I can compare my life to Tiger Woods, but I don't see his life to the point where it was broken, or maybe he just hasn't sunk that low yet, because it's very debilitating. It drains you. If you looking back at the totality of my life, at my lowest point to where I've come from, it's, you know, I hate to say it's quite depressing. So once I did that, you know, 180, you know, that 180-degree turn, I like, felt the need to, like, you know, write my book and let people know that, you know, this affects a lot of people that we know and love. We just don't talk about it. You know, you have 17 million people that's clinically diagnosed as having a sexual, you know, addiction. But you know, especially within the African-American community or black community, you know, we don't look at it that way. We look at it that, you know, he may be a ladies man, or she may have loose morals, or, you know, a person may watch porn a lot, or a person likes to masturbate a lot. All these are various degrees of, you know, having a sexual addiction. But we just look at it, these people, and we throw the term out there, you know, as just being freaks, and we leave it at that. So we never ask these people that may be our friends, that may be, you know, husbands, wives, you know, sisters, brothers, whatever. We never ask them, can you stop doing what you're doing? So if we were to take the time out to ask them, can you stop, and then they couldn't stop, then that's when you know you have a problem, when you can't stop doing what you're doing.
Wow. Well, I can, you know, just like I was explaining to Rhea from reading the book, you know, I could see that there was an addiction going on here, because Nicholas was with all kind of women. He was in all kind of sexual situations, and, you know, just he basically, as long as he got satisfied, he did not look at a person's body type or their, you know, even their hygiene didn't even matter to him. So that lets me know that this person was definitely addicted, because a person who, you know, wouldn't do the things that Nicholas did.
And this is true, and I could not have said that, you know, or made that observation any better, you know, myself. A person that doesn't care about, like you said, hygiene, how a person looks, doesn't care about, you know, having sex outside or, you know, things of this nature, that's, you know, definitely, you know, symptoms and signs of a sex addict. And the character in the book, Nicholas, you know, he didn't have any care at all. If an opportunity presented itself, you know, no matter where the opportunity may arise, he was there for the taking.
Right, because I mean, the list just goes on. The type of women he was with, Betsy, which was a prostitute, and the deaf girl, and Stephanie, and Isla, and Jawbone Judy, and, you know, all these women, and even a, you know, a crackhead, and, like, I'm not gonna give away, you know, nothing in the book, but, you know, what happened with the crackhead was, I guess that was his lowest point, you know, but it just, you know, changed up my whole perspective as far as, like, being, and people with that addiction, it can be harmful to themselves as well as to the next person, because if you are out there and you're not using protection, because 9 times out of 10, I don't think a person who's addicted is going to take the time to, you know, to put on a rubber, you know, and get ready to have sex. Because when that urge comes, all he's thinking about is being satisfied. And a rubber or protection is the last thing on a person who's sexually addicted. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, you're right. You know, he's not thinking along. He doesn't think clearly. You know, it's just he's thinking of feeding that high. He's not thinking about, you know, being proactive in stopping STDs. He's not being, you know, thinking proactive of, like, you know, not getting somebody pregnant. He's not thinking of none of that. He's just thinking about, honestly, getting off. That's his end and end all into his, you know, his unfortunately, his whole being, his whole existence at that time is always to just to get off. He's not thinking logically at all. You know, if he was thinking logically, then he would have to stop him own self in the tracks and look and be like, what I'm doing is insane. But he's not, since he's not thinking logically, you know, it doesn't make a difference. None of that stuff. It really just doesn't matter.
Wow. Okay, let's okay, and in the book, just to show you just how insane Nicholas was, well, how addicted he was, excuse me, he had gotten locked up for being in the house of prostitution, and he tried to hook up with the police officer. And that was like, I'm just saying, wow, he's really something. But, you know, that was that addiction. And when you have an addiction, you just are not in your right mind. You're not. Because what in the world just happened?
I'm still
when that
here.
Addiction, oh, okay, when that addiction calls for that satisfaction, that's what you're going to do. And it doesn't matter. She was into the church, and Nicholas had also had went to a church. And he still, you know, listened to the sermon and everything. He still was, you know, about it. So,
that's just,
you know,
it, go that on. That was, you know, points I had to bring up. Various points in the book. It just shows you that his thought process was, you know, very single-minded, like how you brought up how he got arrested, you know what I'm saying, for being in the house of prostitution. You know, he didn't do so well in the house of prostitution, so he was looking to redeem himself. And he found that, you know, the death sergeant that was processing him out, he found her to be, you know, to his liking. And, of course, she already knows that you just got arrested, you know, for soliciting prostitution. And that doesn't matter to him. He's not embarrassed. He's not concerned. He's not, you know, worrying about her looking at him like less than a man, because he looks at her as an object. You know, he objectifies her. And so as him looking at her just as a sole sexual object, he tries to, you know, get her number and get to know her, you know, carnally. And, you know, she in turn gives him, you know, information to a church. And I'm not going to give that whole scene away, but even him getting signs for help throughout the book, he always would, like, go left. You know, you had the police officer that, you know, gave him, you know, the address to a church for him to go, and he still was trying to sleep with her, and she, you know, thwarted his advances, like, you know, you bugging, get out of here, yada, 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 and he's still, like, pursuing. So it's just like, you know, his addiction was at a fever pace. It was peaking. And they were showing no signs of, you know, decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I did notice about Nicholas, his addiction did not take him to, you know, because you had some sex addicts I know that dive into homosexual acts or even, you know, with animals. They, you know, are so addicted. But Nicholas, when he was with, I think it was Stephanie, or was it Isla? And I think it was Isla who wanted to, well, it was one, I don't know who it was, but one of the ladies that used strap-ons. And you said, no, I don't do that. So, you know, you did have a little bit of morals about it.
I guess everybody had their, well, the main character, he did have lines he wouldn't cross. And throughout the book, he never talked about being with other men. You know, of course, you know, kids was definitely the no-no, and animals. Those three things, you know, same sex, no, kids, no, and being with animals was no.
Right.
I guess that was his only moral barometer. Anything else, you know, he would at least listen to. He would at least, like, you know, give it some consideration. And when you're talking about, you know, how wide sex is, to only have those three things that he told himself that he could never do, but sex is so broad, I mean, like, but he would consider everything else. That's
right. Right, because he definitely, you know, did a lot of sexual things that I guess in his mind was normal. But, you know, just being with all these different women, that was the part that was his addiction. And also in the book, you spoke of a prostitute, Gloria. And it was just so, when I finished reading about Gloria, that was really something as well. I'm not going to give it away what was going on with Gloria, but that was really something, because she had a special customer. I think she was having sex with him for 5 years, 2 to 5 years, something like that.
Something in that range.
Yeah. And then come to find out, that was really, I said, oh, my goodness, you know. And things like that do actually happen. Now, I don't know if you put that in the book as someone that you knew this happened with, but, you know, reading that, I know that those types of things happen. So was that a part of the truth in this book, or?
No, not my truth per se, but like you said, I know that, you know, these things happen. It happens, you know, sadly with regularity. It's more than we, you know, care to think about. It happens. So the reason that I put that in there, because I wanted to show different shades of other people's, I guess, the wreckage of what sex has done to them. And so when I wrote that part about the prostitute and her special trick, or her special genre, the guy that she was turning tricks with, you know, for between 2 to 5 years, you know, I wanted to show people that, you know, prostitutes have lives too. So, you know, but, you know, we as society, not only people that actually solicit sex from them, but we as society, we objectify them in a very wrongful way, because we see them and we just, you know, it's really cut and dry. It's pay for play. And I need to show them that they have lives outside of walking the street corners, you know, feet hurting, it's cold outside, pimps chasing up and down the block. I wrote some points of a prostitute life's humorous, but if you take away the humor and you look at what they go through on a day-to-day basis, it's very sad. And so for what this particular prostitute had went through in the book, you know, it made you think, like, wow, you know, it made you, I need you to pull a person in that regard, I need to pull them to the bottom, the very bottom, and have them look at that, you know, what that character went through. And so I had to paint that picture, you know, extremely graphic, to show them that, you know, prostitutes are people too. They just have a multitude of problems. But society, you know, just, you know, looks at them as sadly the worst of the worst. But, you know, that's somebody's daughter out there. That's somebody's mom. That's somebody's sister out there. But,
right,
once again, we're trained by society to look at them worse. We don't train to look at them as like, yo, they need help just like anybody else.
One of the areas you all just discussed brought up some, let's say, some points that cause confusion and make people think a certain way. First of all, when you say the word addict, one of the first things to come to mind is no self-control when it comes to whatever. There's no control. That's part of what that addiction means. When you say that this gentleman can, there are certain lines he don't cross. He has certain things. It's like, okay, then you do have some self-control. Now, I bring that up because one of the questions that I have, at least in my head at least, is what's the difference between a sex addict and a hoe? Because they're unless you're talking about medication and things of that nature, what's the difference?
That's a great question. The difference between an addict and a hoe knowingly knows what they are, and a hoe, don't get it twisted, a hoe can be a man or a woman. It's just
word.
So with that being said, a man and woman knowingly do what they do with thought. So they're conscious. See, the key word here is conscious. They're conscious of, you know, being out there promiscuously. An addict is conscious only up to a fact, only up to a point. It's like it's a constant. We have to get off a hoe. May hoe a lot, but there may be some days where hoe just ain't hoeing. An addict is always going to hoe. Rain, sleet, whatever case may be, an addict, a sexual addict is always going to have some type of sex, some type of form of sex to get off. A hoe may take a day off, may take a week off, may spend time with the family, or may flirt, or just walk up and down the block, or just may not do nothing, or may just talk, you know, reckless on the telephone. But a sex addict is always going to feed his addiction, irregardless. That's with any addict. That's like if you take a crackhead is always going to feed his addiction. So with him having his more barometer of the three things that he wouldn't do, I mean, that's just something that was instilled in him. You know, we took – he was, you know, at his all-time worst, but, you know, certain rules that, you know, in him that he just wasn't going to cross. Like if you take a male crackhead will do some of the most outlandish stuff, but he'll tell himself, I won't turn any, you know, tricks with other males. Then you'll have some male crackheads that will do anything, including turn, you know what I'm saying, male tricks. So he is with not low, but he's just with, you know, to the absolute bottom of his addiction. Like I said, there's different levels of being an addict and things that you will do to, like, satisfy your addiction.
Okay.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. You had those.
You know, think about it, because speaking frankly, and this is late night, and I thank you for having such an open forum here. You know, I grew up, you know, in Southeast Washington, D.C., and I'm not going to speak bad about anybody and what happened to their lives and why they do what they do. But, you know, the neighborhood hoe didn't fuck everybody. A sex addict will fuck anything moving, you know what I'm saying, as long as it doesn't, you know, mess with his moral compass. But, you know, a neighborhood hoe, she might not like the cutest dude on the block. Or she might not like the toughest dude on the block. But she could be hitting, like, you know, 20 friends and don't hit you for whatever reason. Because she's still conscious of why she does what she does. Whether it be a wrong conscious or a right conscious, she's still conscious of why she's doing what she's doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, they
definitely thought-provoking, and it would change. It changed the way you view things, and it changed the way you look at things. Because I know one of the things that you heard about sex addiction when somebody got busted cheating,
mm-hmm.
and usually it was on a spouse, or you got that a lot when it came to the famous and to the rich. That was their ways of holding on to their money so she didn't walk away with 50% of what they had.
This
and things
true.
Such as that. So those are the ideals that is in your head. And then the question that I just asked is another reason that they're, you know, because it's like, wow. Like I said, it's very thought-provoking because it makes you, if you are a quote-unquote thinking person, it will open up your thoughts to the point where you have to at least look at that other side. And if you look at that other side and you're logical, you know that there are actual sex addicts out there. You know it actually exists. But I will say this. I believe that a huge percentage of those that are denoted as that don't fall under that. They just got caught.
Yeah, I'm.
But you know, I want to say something about that. As far as like when Eric Benet cried, he had a sex addiction. Tiger Woods, that was basic. I think that was just to save their money or to save their face because they weren't. They was caught cheating. So they, you know, in order to save face or whatever the reason, they didn't want to admit to the cheating, so they say they addicted to sex. You know, now, so, like I'm saying, they need to read this book and really find out what a sex addict is. And I'm serious, this book, like Nicholas did not, like I said, the only thing Nicholas did not do was he did not have sex with children, did not have sex with men and animals, but he didn't care about the woman's looks, her body, her hygiene, anything. As long as he was getting his satisfaction from this woman, that was all that mattered to him. And you see the women that Tiger Woods cheated with, and Eric Benet, the woman he cheated with. I'm quite sure they wouldn't, you know, do the things that Nicholas did and then say that they was caught cheating or whatever. But there are definitely, like, you know, people out here that are addicted to sex, men and women. And my thing is, just like Nicholas, you don't care what the person, you know, you don't care nothing about what, as long as that person can satisfy you sexually, when that urge comes on, you want that sex, they don't care.
This is true. This is definitely true. It's society looks at it, you know, like, who's not addicted to sex, because we all like sex, but they're looking at it because, you know, it's what, you know, we're geared to do. You know, sex is perpetuated in America like no other country. It's crazy. Sex is perpetuated in America, and you have more sex crimes in America than you have in other countries that's, you know, sexually liberated. You know, as you go to Amsterdam in the red light district, you know, when most things over there are free. So you actually have a lower violence level in the sex field within America. You know, sex is constantly perpetuated. You know, you take a look at Sports Center and whatnot, or watching a football game, they have to show cheerleaders. If you look at commercials and whatnot, they always have a sexual twist on them. If you watch, you know, late night TV, there's always infomercials and things of this nature. I remember back in the day when Girls Gone Wild was like all the rage, and if you stayed up late enough at night, you would see all these infomercials about Girls Gone Wild. So we know that we live in a sex-driven society. We know that sex sales in this country is into the billions. You know, but what we're not willing to talk about is how does that, you know, play with your mind? Whereas you're talking about, you know, your Tiger Woods, and I forget my man's name that was married to Sandra Bullock. He was the biker dude.
Jesse James.
Right. Jesse,
yeah, Jesse James.
Claims to have a sexual addiction. But like I said, it's a convenient excuse once you get caught. But, you know.
Right.
It's a convenient excuse once you get caught. But they don't allow you to look in your life to see, like, you know, are you really an addict, or are you just using this as an excuse, like you said, to save face, to save money. You know, me personally, you know, I've experienced it, you know, for all it's worth, and for the highs and the lows. And so that's come, the book touches so many people in a very graphic way, to whereas, like, they ask, what was this for? Well, this is this, you did this, this, and this, and this. And I tell people, for the most part, you know, 85% of that is me, and it's 100% my mind state, because my mind state was always to conquer. It was always to conquer. Like, if I was to see a female and she so interested me and whatnot, I'm not thinking to get to know you, to know, you know, if you're a God-fearing woman, you know, if you're morally, you know, sound. I'm not worrying about none of that. I'm worrying, what is the quickest, you know, points between A and B. Point A is me meeting you. Point B is in the bed. Point C is goodbye. It's not going no further than that.
Right. Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to open the lines for questions and comments, okay?
Sun is shining, there's plenty of light.
Oh.
Day is dawning, sunny and bright. But after I've been crying all night, the sun is cold and the new day seems old. Since I lost my baby. Oh, since I lost my baby. are singing and the children are playing. There's plenty of work and the bosses are paying. Not a bad word should a young heart be saying. But fun is a fool, and with money a fool.
Out there has any questions or comments, you can hit the one, raise your hand up, and we're taking questions and comments at this particular time. And I see someone has their hand up, so I'm going to bring them on. 202-248, do you have a question or comment for DK?
Yes, and I have a comment also. I believe in my younger years that I was a sex addict. And I'm going to say why, because I was sexually abused around the age of 5. I say around the age of 9, I started masturbating. Then, when I was able to really get out and have sex, I never could get enough. I have had more men on my hands and toes than you done had on your hands and toes, than you have on your hands and toes. At one time, my mother even told me I needed to slow down. And at that time, I was like maybe 19 years old. My question is, I'm not having sex as often as I had it at one time. That's because I'm like, let's say I'm 50-ish something. As people progress and get older, are they still sex addicts? And are you still a sex addict?
Well, first of all, you know, I pray for a speedy recovery for you and me both. Second of all, yes, I'm a recovering sex addict, which I mean there is, you always will be in a state of recovery, because being a sex addict is a state of mind. If you do things that, you know, yourself has discussed doing and me, you know, have done. You know, it's a state of mind. If I go out and I want to have sex with you, your girlfriend, your sister, your cousin, you know, this prostitute, this crackhead, this whatever, it's a state of mind. So first of all, you have to change your way of thinking. Once you change your way of thinking and change who you allow in your life and whatnot, that's when you get on the road to recovery. You know, and the reason I say recovering sex act is because you're always going to have the foundation laid to always be, you know, a slave to your addiction. You just have to mentally want to stop and, you know, take the necessary steps to do so.
DK, did you get treatment for your addiction, or you just
I have
how did you
I have attended 12-step program, sexual anonymous, pardon me. But more so, it would just mean, you know, certain things happening in my life where I had reached rock bottom, and it was just clear to me, it finally became clear to me that I had to stop. So it's just like with anything that's bad for you or, you know, you have to have a stopping point, you know. My stopping point may not have been the caller's stopping point. You just, everybody has different stopping points, but you or rock bottoms, should I say. Everybody has different rock bottoms. And so when I finally reached my personal rock bottom, then that's when I knew I have a problem.
Well, hello?
Yes.
Hello? Yes. I say that even to change my, I don't think I was a sex addict, but to change my sleeping around with all these different men. I mean, I would wake up in hotels trying to think, who is this guy? What is his name? My mother made that statement, I needed to settle down. I went out looking for the right man to settle down with. I would even perform oral sex just so that I could get that right man. I'm asking you, is that a sign of a sex addict, or would you say that I was a sex addict at one time, because I haven't had any sex in about 3 years now? I was married for a while, and then my husband passed, and now I'm at the point that, you know, I'm even scared to have sex. Will I start over again, you know, where I left off at before my husband passed? Because I believe that helped me a lot. I wanted to be an honest woman, a Christian woman, and not just, you know, be a hoe. I'll put it like that.
This is true. You stopped for 3 years, but, you know, after your mother told you what she told you, you know, it made you look at yourself. I don't know if that was your rock bottom. I don't know if that was your stopping point. But, you know, it had to take something for you to, like, you know, look at yourself objectively, you know, to be honest, to have... You know, people talk about truths, and truth is not always something pretty. A truth about our own selves is always, to be honest, ugly. You know, once we look at ourselves in the most, you know, not friendly light, then we can, you know, have effective change. So for you stopping for 3 years, you know, you definitely on the road to recovery. But if you're having sex with people that you don't know, if you can't stop, say if you, you know, having sex with a guy that you just met 10 minutes ago, you leave him and, you know, you get the itch to, you know, bump into your next-door neighbor and you have sex with him, then it's safe to assume that you do have a problem. We all have different forms of degrees of being a sex addict. You know, some of the, you know, worst-case scenarios when everything's fair game, and some people do have a moral barometer of things they will and won't do. But if you haven't had sex in 3 years, then, you know, you're definitely on the road to recovery, and it shows that, you know, this is what you said. You said that you wanted to be, you know, God-fearing woman, so your mentality had changed by your own admission. Your thought process changed because you started to adhere to something bigger than your addiction.
And you're right. So I don't know if anybody asked this question. When did you finally figure it out that you was a sex addict? At what age?
That's a good question. I've liked sex since, I don't know. I guess the running joke would be I liked sex when I came out the womb. Let me look back on my life.
And how old was you when you were abused?
I was roughly about four or five.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
See, we were about the same age, because I was sexually abused, like I said, when I was in the kindergarten, on up until I was 9 years old.
I'm so sorry to hear that. God knows, like, my thing that, you know, to, you know, deal or tamper with a child's innocence is one of the worst things a person can do. It's, you know, I try my best not to pass judgment on anyone, but a child's innocence, because I have kids of my own, a child's innocence so beautiful to actually watch that innocence not be tampered with. Because their wonderment is a great thing. But to answer your original question, I've been liking sex ever since I was introduced to it. And when I knew that my train of thought was different than the typical young male, I'm going to say it was like, honestly, my late teens, early 20s, when I knew that, you know, I possibly could have a problem.
Okay. And what, are you in recovery now?
Yes, I'm constantly in recovery because it's a mindset. You know, just like you said, you no longer wanted to be promiscuous because you wanted to be a God-fearing woman, you know, before. And, you know, you got married. Can I ask you a question? I don't mean to be too personal. Once you got married, did you stop sleeping around?
Oh, that's a good question. I stopped sleeping around for maybe about 9 years of my marriage, and then I did have an affair with somebody. Well, it wasn't even an affair. It was a one night, and I felt so dirty, and I felt so ashamed, and I felt like, I mean, I had been drinking. I hadn't been doing nothing. I just think that I wasn't getting attention from my husband that he was should have been giving me, and I just got with somebody who I haven't seen in at least 30 years. I'd have had no feelings or nothing, but I got with this guy, and I have regretted it ever since. So, you know, I don't know if that's part of a sex addict's actions or what, but right after I did that, I went home, went in my closet, and I prayed and asked for forgiveness. So,
but once again, it goes to show you about your mindset. Your mindset recognized that you wasn't happy with your actions, and you adhered. It has to be something larger than you. And of course, you know, me being a God-fearing man, God is larger than all of us. And once you adhere to what, you know, He has for us, it makes it so much, I don't want to use the word easier, but we can cope with any struggle better when it's bigger than, you know, when the cure is bigger than the disease. The disease is always going to be larger than us because we're flesh. And there's nothing like, you know, sex, you know, to flesh because, you know, we're human. So if I see you or if I see Delicious, if I see whomever, and I deem you out to be attractive, and I'm talking about if my mindset was still back, you know, as it was back in the day, it's bigger than that. So I see you. I'm not looking to get to know who you are as a person. You could be a beautiful person. You could be a beautiful God-fearing person that can actually help me with my addiction. But if my mindset is not that of wanting to get better or adhering to greater than me, then the only thing I want to know is what's between your legs. That's it. That's all. Anything else is just, you know, food for thought.
Right. Well, I know God has entered in my life in this because even sometimes the thought of, I mean, everybody wants a companion. Even a dog wants a companion. A dog wants attention. You understand what I'm saying? And
sure.
I'm trying to figure out the two. Do I really just want sex or do I really just want somebody to love me? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, my advice to you, and I'm not a doctor. I'm only speaking from past experience.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to you is to stay in prayer. And I know how it is, how you want to be with somebody. And the body has needs. You know, we're not going to sit up and pardon my language, we're not going to sit up in bullshit. You know, we're not going to sit up, nobody's not going to sit here and act holier than thou. That's not
right.
What we're doing. You know, the
right.
Body has needs. So you just have to stay in prayer. Will we all stumble and fall? Yeah, I'm not telling you to stumble and fall, but I'm just telling you.
I understand that.
That's a process of life. So, with that being said, stay in prayer. You know, God hears all our prayers, and sometimes it's really dark. Sometimes it's a fight. You know, like, you know, I've stopped having, you know, indiscriminate sex for some time and whatnot. And so, how did I wean myself off is that I got heavy into porn watching. And so, because I work on the computer, porn is always accessible to me. So I have to, you know, stay in prayer. I have to have a out loud, conscious conversation with myself to be like, not to open.
No, I'm not going to do that, yes.
Right.
Because I watch the porn and be right in here, you know, doing my thing. And then I say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I'd rather do that than to go out there in the street and just do whatever or with whoever. And I can thank God that I know for a fact He has protected me all these years.
True.
You know,
very
from
true.
Any type of STDs. I just
right.
thank Him for that, yes.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy that, you know, you understand that, you know, if you do have a problem there, you know, what are your triggers? And you have to ask yourself that, what are your triggers? See, for me, porn is a trigger because I'll watch porn, and after watching porn for a certain while, I'll need more than that. As for you, you can watch porn, you know, do your thing, and you're good.
Right.
I'll watch porn, do my thing, then I want to do somebody else's thing, too. So I can't even open up them can of worms because it takes me to places that I don't want to go back to.
Right.
I'm too far gone to go back. So, and don't, it's hard, you know, especially.
And what's the name of your book?
The Ugly Side of Sex.
The Ugly Side of Sex. I'm going to have to get that book. And you definitely got to buy it here.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
So, DK, can you possibly read us an excerpt from your book?
But of course. I don't have the Mr. Rogers reading voice, so y'all going to have to bear with me. Yeah, I remember Mr. Rogers. Used to come on 26.
Sure.
Yeah, with that yellow sweater.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers used to creep me the hell out.
Beautiful
but it's
day
good.
In the neighborhood.
Right.
And then trying.
And give me 1 second.
Okay.
Well, it's definitely an interesting topic, and it's definitely one that's, like I said earlier, it's thought-provoking if you allow yourself to open up, you know, beyond just what we, a lot of us, kind of stopped it at. You know, it's like, wow.
Well, you know what, I never thought about the term of sex addicts, you know, back in the day. We really didn't start hearing that word until the rich and famous started
exactly.
saying that they were sex
exactly.
addicts.
Exactly.
You know?
Right, because
well,
it was.
The
it
word
was
back in the day that I heard was nymphomaniac.
Was you a hoe?
Right,
and my mother used to say.
But for the man, you a player. You
right,
you know,
that's
you,
how,
well,
that's how it was.
Well,
but
well,
the female,
well,
you a nympho, you a hoe, you a this, you a slut.
Or
I mean,
a hoe monger. They used to call men hoe mongers.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of the
as
player.
Far as when this sex addiction thing came out, it came out when, you know, as far as like that's what the title that was given to the men, and women were nymphomaniacs, you
exactly.
know, or whores or sluts, you know.
Well, you got a white
liver. You know, just like DK said. That, you know, you don't look at it as a person being addicted to sex opposed to,
no.
you know,
right.
just label them as being a whore, a slut, you know, because there is a thin line there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they used to say, do you have a white liver? And I used to say, yeah, I got a white liver.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
y'all
that,
heard
you know,
that saying before.
Yeah.
So whenever y'all ready.
Oh, yeah, we're ready, darling.
Okay. I'm reading chapter 49. Bear with me, please.
Okay.
Truth be told, I believe I was born without morals. Not in all cases, just the ones where I had the need and the desire to be satisfied sexually. Morally, the right thing would have been to call her a cab so she could get home safely. Telling by her slurred speech and glazed eyes, she was way past drunk. Hell, she'd still be tipsy 3 days after this night. Someone had propped her against the pole outside of the club. More than likely, it was the bouncers because she was loud and a public mess. So they put her loud ass outside in public. People going in the club looked at her like you do a car crash. Sorry it happened, but glad it wasn't them. Fuck all y'all sorry asses in that fucking club. Fuck you, your mama, your daddy, and the condom that popped to make y'all sorry asses, bitches. Come on, baby. If you keep this up, your ass will be in jail till Monday morning. Come on and take a walk with me and tell me all about it. I said this soothingly as I placed my arm around her waist to study her walk. I had never made it inside the club, and no, I was not playing Captain Saberho. I had just pulled up about 5 minutes before and caught the tail end of what was happening, smelling an opportunity. Do I know you? I mean, shit, I like to know you, but even as fucked up as I am right now, I know if I knew you. Nah, you don't know me. My name is Nikki. You don't look like no damn Nikki. You look like you could be a dong, and that's what I'm going to call your ass. Whatever works for you. So tell me what happened. Well, Donald, I came with my girlfriends looking to have a good time. Them bitches act like they don't know me when I get to feeling right. Too busy chasing niggas all over the club. So that left my ass at the bar tossing back shots. Tired of this club scene shit, but ain't nothing else to do. Anyway, I get into it with some dude who thinks he owns me because he bought a few of my drinks for me. Long story short, I goes off on him and they put my ass out, talking about they barred my ass or something. Fuck 'em. DC is filled with clubs. This is just one. Then out of the blue, she started laughing like she told a joke while she was telling me what happened. What's so funny? Well, hell, I've been barred from about 4 other clubs. I'm running out of clubs to be barred from. Right now, I ain't too fond of myself. Different weekends, same shit. You think I'd learn. One day I will, just not tonight. You'll be all right. Why? Because you say so? And why are you helping me anyway? Are you helping me? I see the way you keep looking me over, taking inventory and shit. Whatever. I'm just keeping your ass from going to jail with all that fuss. Nigga, please. This is a weekend ritual for me. We both laughed at this. My arm was still around her waist, holding her tightly. And she was right. I had taken full inventory of her as soon as I spied her.
Ooh.
She was attractive without being pretty or beautiful. Although her drunkenness and unladylike behavior betrayed her attractiveness. Through all the unsteady walking, we finally made our way over to my car. Through a drunken stare, she continued looking at me with distrust. I was still trying to be nonchalant about what I really wanted to do with her. Either way, my approach called for an easy hand to an already heavy situation. Look, my car's right here. We don't have to go anywhere. We can just kick back and talk, help you find something better to do with your weekends. Mm-hmm, was all she said. I took that as a yes, opened the passenger side door, and helped her in. Joining her in the car, I cut on the radio and found some slow music for us to chill to. Are you trying to set the mood or something? I just want you to be comfortable. That's all I'm going to be is comfortable. I couldn't fuck you if I wanted to. I'm on my period and shit. Even if I just wanted you to know you wasn't getting none. Did I say I wanted some? You a man. You always want some. Anyway, talk to me. I'm all ears. Ain't nothing really to talk about. I get to the club telling myself that I ain't drinking. I ain't acting like no fool. That I'm just going to enjoy myself. Shit always start off good. Some nights too good, like I'd be looking for a reason not to have a good time. She was quiet for a while, as if she was looking within herself and not liking what she saw. Her face got tighter, like she was trying to hold back whatever she'd been drinking, and with a quiver of her lip and a heavy sigh, the first stream of tears began running down her face. All her thoughts was washed away with each tear as her sobs became louder and just as pitiful. I'm just tired. I got 2 badass kids. They daddies ain't shit. Every man I run across starts off all right, and then they ain't shit before too long. Hell, might as well add me to that list, because every weekend I find myself doing the same old dumb shit, no matter how much I lie to myself and say it will be different. Like I said, I have no morals when it comes to sex. None. I should have been just a listening ear and afterwards giving her a ride home. That would have been the right thing to do. But how can you do the right thing when right just ain't in you? My voice was soft, and I put her close with one arm and told her all she wanted and needed to hear. I told her that she was beautiful, and the men in her life were fools for not seeing that, that she was special and she could be loved if she let her guard down just a little. My lips were pressed against her ear. I guess that made it easier for me to lie to her. The kisses along her neck made it easier for her to believe me. As her sobs turned to moans, my hands grew more familiar with her body. I felt her up like a teenager on a parked car date down Haynes Point. My DC people, y'all remember them days. Before I knew it, I had unzipped my pants and pulled out my semi-hard dick. With my hand guiding hers, I helped her find my pocket monster in the dock, showing only a slight of hesitation when she first touched it. She wrapped her hands around the base of it and began to stroke it to its full size. Now it was my turn to moan. She had to know what was coming next, but she seemed to content in just giving me a hand job. She had to know it was her drunken mouth that I wanted to put my dick in. With my hand on the nape of her neck, I began to gently push her head down into my lap. she resisted like she didn't understand that being in a parked car with a dick in hand usually led to a dick being in your mouth. The harder I pushed, the more she resisted. So I stopped pushing altogether. She still had me in her hand, stroking like this was the first dick she jerked. I can see myself loving you, being there for you, and your sons, but you have to give me a reason to love you. Show me how much you want me in your life. And with that said, the smile returned like she had heard it all before. I could tell she wanted to believe me, but she should have known better. And before I knew better, I felt her hot, drunken breath hovering on the head of my dick. Her lips followed all the way down to the base of my dick, the first suck leaving a spit trail as she pulled back. Even in her drunken state, you could tell she had the mouth of an old-school pro. She wasn't scared to throw lips to my dick. No unnecessary tongue action was needed at all. As I arched my hips, meeting her mouth, she sucked me off hands-free. Her mouth was like a wet back in search of the spittle that was about to come from my balls. The more excited I became, the more passionate she had become about getting me off. Each bob of her head had become a deep throat to my dick. Each pull up was a long and lustful slurp that made me wonder why she didn't have a man again. Man, I gotta say, good head is hard to find, and anything better than good head make you want to slap your mama. This drunk
wow.
is a great head. I never felt any teeth in strong, wet pulls from her pretty mouth. Her pull was so strong, I thought the bitch had man jaws. So you know I had to run my hand between her legs just to be sure. Feeling nothing but swollen, moist, put my overexcited mind to rest. The only time she stopped was when I touched her, moaning slightly. With a little push to her head, she went back to giving incredible lip service. I went back to wondering just why she didn't have no man. Great head from a bad woman still would make most men come home every night. I was tempted to stop her and ask, but my balls got to tingling and my toes got to curling. My eyes had rolled back in my head, but the only thing I was possessed by was her mouth and what she could do with it. My body had suddenly become so stiff she had to know what was coming next. She might have been a lot of things, a drunk, a parking lot horse's parking lot pimp, a great cocksmith, but a cum dodger, she wasn't one of them. I grunted loud enough to wake the dead as I shot my load. I spilled my seed into her mouth with such force that it was filled instantly while she was still balls deep, giving me head. Her last pull off my dick ended with a heavy spit trail of my cum that made a pretty mess around her mouth. Looking her in the face after what seemed like forever, I was met with that drunken stupor again. With her eyes halfway closed, like she just got finished smoking the best hash, she slurped the last cum spit trail like a thick strand of spaghetti. And without warning, her jaws filled up and her eyes became as wide as saucers, looking around frantically. Before I could ask what was wrong, she lowered her head into my lap and gave back what she got from me tenfold. The putrid smell filled the car instantly, and I couldn't get the windows down fast enough. Vomit was everywhere. She threw up so hard she began heaving and coughing violently. Sitting there, thoroughly disgusted and fucked up over the situation, the only thing I could think was that my cum had made a bad chaser that was one shot she shouldn't have thrown back.
Wow. And see, that just goes to
show.
Yeah, that just goes to show that was his addiction. He picking up this girl that was drunk. And all he was thinking about was, he even said how he would care for her kids, you know. But, you know, that's just the way of an addicted person.
Mm.
That was really something. So, DJ, I really didn't get, sorry that I didn't get a proper introduction of you when you came on. Let the listeners know just where you're from and what you got going on, you know, as far as your publishing company.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, first of all, I'd like to apologize for coming on your show late. That is so unprofessional. And I got caught up, and I'm so happy that you still allowed me to come on. And I've had a great time.
Well, not to have sex with you.
Nah, it's been a minute.
That's
you
a
know,
joke, baby.
It's quite all right, but it's still been a minute, but bigger than all of that. I'm currently working on my next book, and the title of my next book is called Have You Seen My Childhood? As you read the book, Nicholas really didn't. His childhood wasn't really talked about in the book. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing is like pretty much like a prequel to The Ugly Side of Sex. I'm a Washingtonian, you know, proud, you know, for all D.C. is worth, you know, the good and bad. You know, I'm a proud Washingtonian.
Have you seen My Next Childhood? That sounds like a book I might want to read before I get The Ugly Side of Sex.
Yeah, well, it's actually, like I said, it's a prequel to.
Is it out already?
I think you should read The Ugly Side of Sex first.
Have you seen My Childhood out?
No, it's not. It should be out.
He's working on that.
I'm pushing for December of this year, if not December this year, no later than February 2012. So that's the absolute latest, but it will be out, you know, no later than February 2012, but I'm really pushing for December of this year.
Okay.
And this book, The Ugly Side of Sex, is this self-published?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I went the self-publishing route is because I didn't want to, you know, go through the headache. And don't get me wrong, you know, being a self-publisher, it's a headache, but it's a joyful headache. Because you get to learn things I didn't know before. It's like, you know, when I do my next book, it'll be so much easier because the mistakes I made in doing things myself, I've learned from them. And then at the end of the day, you get the biggest piece of the pie. And it's nothing like being in business for yourself because, you know, the days that I'm slacking, I feel it business-wise. And the days that I'm really on my grind, I feel that business-wise. So it's a constant motivation to always get up, and not necessarily to sell of books, but to get up and, you know, be creative, to talk to, you know, fellow authors and find out what they're doing and, you know, what they're going through and, you know, you exchange ideas and just be helpful to one another because, you know, we're all trying to, like, you know, we all have the same, you know, readers. We're pitching our ideas to them differently.
Mm-hmm. So also, what about your publishing company? How long have you had your company, and what made you actually start a company?
I've had my company, 2011. I had my company roughly about 2 years, and the reason I had started it, I didn't want to actually shop a manuscript around to, you know, one of the bigger houses, and finding out how the big publishing companies work, it was like it would be simpler for me to actually do it myself. You know, I didn't want nobody to tell me that the cover of my book was too risque. I didn't want nobody to tell me that, you know, the content of my book needed to be toned down. I didn't need nobody to tell me that, you know, this needed to be changed. You know, everything that I do, it's me. So if I make a mistake and it doesn't, you know, go over well with the buying public, then I have to learn from that on my own. But if I do something right, then I need to be the benefit of that as well. And plus with the urban market, and I don't want to be lumped in with anybody in urban. I don't knock any other writers, but I just think I'm a writer. I don't say I'm urban anything. But with the Biz on Black, you know, unfortunately, they lump us all together. But with the market being as it is and whatnot, you always got to do things to stand out. You have to be different. So when you look at, you know, the cover of my book, you know, and the color schemes and, you know, the way that I write, I believe that it gives the reader more than, you know, a typical erotic book. And what I mean by that, I know it gives the reader more because it's based upon my life, first of all. And second of all and whatnot, it's just, you know, sex is heavy in a book. But honestly, sex is only the vehicle to get you to the message.
Right. Right, because the sex is graphic and it's basically just like what's going on out here. And you didn't hold anything back. And, you know, that's what I appreciate about the book because, it you know, it held my attention from the very first page till the very last page.
Besides,
and I'm quite sure.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Besides writing your books, what are you doing with your life now?
Trying to be a better me. You know, it's crazy as it sounds. I'm 41, so you would think that you know yourself. But if you're constantly evolving, you really don't. You may know the old you, but you're changing. So as far as what I'm doing with my life, I'm not doing the things that made me go through what I went through to, you know, have that experience to write the book. I'm trying to be a better father to my kids. I'm trying to be just a better man in general, and I'm trying to actually grow and evolve and be a better God-fearing man. Every day for me is not perfect. God knows there's some days where I just want to actually go back down that rabbit hole, you know, back to Alice in Wonderland and just, you know, as sad as it may say, as found, have my fun. The pull of sex is going to pull me, you know, to the day that I die. But the trick is to constantly stay busy,
Right.
To, you know, not let boredom become my best friend and always,
right.
you know, want more for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, with that being said, we're going to take a little break and come back. I don't even know what I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Play something funky.
Okay.
If you got something that works,
you got any requests?
Yeah, play something funky, or unless you got something by Prince, that works too.
Oh wow!
Let me see if I have anything by Prince.
Me, baby, darling, Nikki. You know, I can't. You know, I barely can read. I definitely can't sing. You know, if you need me to sing, you know, darling, Nikki, let me know. I know a girl named Nikki. Some people said she was a sex fiend. Met in a hotel lobby, masturbating to a magazine.
Mm-hmm. I think I don't know if I still have that on here. Let me see. Such a long list here. And, well, I'm going to play something else, but I'm still going to be looking for Darling Nikki or the song by Prince.
Oh,
Jackie Ross, Selfish One. And the only Prince song I have, DK, is The Beautiful Ones.
Oh, that works too. Want me to sing it for you?
Rhea, do you have any questions for DK?
No, I don't have any more questions.
Okay, call it 202.
Thank you very much.
202-248. Do you have any more questions for DK?
Yes. Where can I get that book?
His
book?
You can go, I can get it off Amazon, or you can go to my website.
Okay.
Get it from his website.
Thank
you. Say the name of it.
My website is en-el-publishing.com.
Okay, that's it?
Yes, ma'am, www.enelpublishing.com. www.en-el-publishing.com.
What does the EN and the EL stand for?
Not a problem. Do you play Scrabble?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Scrabble or in Words with Friends, and Rhea's laughing in the background, well, Scrabble or Words with Friends, you can spell letters. And EN is actually how you spell the letter N. EL is how you spell the letter L. Those are actually my mother's initials. So I actually named my company after my mom.
Oh. Okay. Wow. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, you know, she's been, you know, a rock. That's my heart, you know, outside of my baby girl. I have two daughters, and both of all three, you know, all three of those are definitely my heart. You know, my mom and my two daughters, those are the love of my life, so.
Oh, okay. How old are your daughters?
17 and 2.
Okay.
Ooh.
Wow.
Hey.
That's a long break.
Yeah, well, you know.
He's right in the middle of two different worlds.
Pretty much. And you're right, you know, one has taken me through what to expect, and the other one is, I already know what she's going to do, so it's pretty much like a win-win.
Okay.
That's interesting. I told my my youngest once, I said, you can't do what Terry did. Travis couldn't do what, I mean, I told him, Travis couldn't do what Terry did. Rhea couldn't do what Travis and Terry did, so you just asked out because you can't do nothing.
There it is.
I'm a big baller. So he stopped trying and became too honest. No.
Wow. Well, we're almost down to the wire, and everybody that, you know, listen to this show, I appreciate you coming on. And let me give a little shout out to the chat room, where everybody's left the chat room, but Stacey K was in the chat room. Let's see who else was in there. Black Man 37 was in there. Trankins was in there. Everybody who basically is listening to the show, the flies on the wall, I appreciate you coming out. I also appreciate DK for coming on and the callers or the caller. Rhea, I appreciate you. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And DK, we're definitely going to have you come back on again once your next book is finished.
For sure. I first of all, thank you for having me, and I would love to come back on once my next book is finished, or in any form. Like if you may have like a panel of authors at one time, and you know, discussing various topics, maybe about the writing industry. I would love to be a part of that.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt at all. So, something else I wanted to say, but you know, when you get older, your brain doesn't work like it used to when it's younger.
Join the club.
They called a friend of mine, said, "Ooh, I just had a junior moment." I said, "Ooh, I like that." Because he said, "I'm not a senior yet, but I just had a junior moment." But okay, I like that.
So we're going to give you a great big round of
applause. Yeah!
And that's for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Can I do a quick shout out and thank the people that mean so much to me?
You most definitely can.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I have to thank my Heavenly Father. You know, all things are possible through God. That's, you know, Lord knows. When I tell people I've been walked on so many sides of the fence and God has always been there to catch me, you know, not even funny, you know. You can't have a testimony, you know, without going through a test. And, you know, I serve, I don't know about anybody else, I'm going to be selfish in my love for God, I serve a great God. With that being said and whatnot, for everybody that has, you know, bought the book, interacted with me about the book, for the text messages and, you know, people who actually, you know, coming up to me after they bought the book and holding a conversation, and I've been talking to people like an hour about, you know, my train of thought. I want to thank those people. You know, we deem success as in actually selling, but which, you know, I would love to, like, you know, sell, but more so just the interaction with people that got the message I was trying to convey to them. You know, I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart, because it means so much when somebody actually get what you're trying to say. I want to thank you so much, Delicious, for having me on your show. I want to thank Rhea, you know, for being a sweetheart, you know, and letting me win in Words with Friends. I want to thank Team DK. Team DK is an awesome team, and I thank them so much for putting up with me, because honestly, I don't know how to do it, because I'd have been told me to kiss my butt a long time ago. Tanisha Rankin, I want to thank her. She's, you know, my right-hand person. Angela Reed, she was like, you know, day one Team DK. She was telling me that I could do this when I didn't believe in myself. My girl's 6 foot port. She's actually 6 foot tall, and I'm only 5-something. So when we're out in public, it's really funny because people think that we're a couple, and she's like 6 foot, and she rocked like 4-inch heels. So, like, she's like, whoa. But long story short, she's a talent in her own right, and by the grace of God, I'll be looking to do things with her in the future. Thank you once again for having me on your show, and I do apologize from the bottom of my heart for being late, but I'm thanking you for holding it down till, you know, I was able to get on it, and I believe we had a great show, and if there's anything I can do in the future of, you know, helping you out, please let me know.
I most certainly will, and I do appreciate you coming on and, you know, sharing all the thoughts and the sentiments and everything, you know, as far as you writing this book and, you know, helping us to understand what sex addict life is about, you know, really putting it out there. You're not just saying, well, I'm a sex addict because I've been with this woman, been with that woman, I cheated. You were definitely displaying the raw end of a sex addict, and I do appreciate that. So, Rhea, you have any closing remarks?
I thank you very much for sharing of your story and the writing of your book, because I know part of it, a small portion of it, is not your story. It is thought-provoking, and it's something that we do need to look at in a broader sense. And I thank you. Once I read the book, I'll really get into it.
Mm-hmm. So our next week's show, we're going to have a young man on, Michael Hayes. He's a spoken word artist. That's next Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the end of the month show, you know, is going to be Slow Jams. So with that being said, everybody, good night. Have a beautiful weekend. DK, I thank you again. Rhea, I thank you. And I thank everybody who tuned in tonight. Have a beautiful weekend. Good night.
Good night, and thank you.
Good night, all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Your heart, tell me why. Good night, everybody.